Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight is Carrie Ann Castillo. I made sure to pronounce the last name correctly. In the correct Guatemalan accent, I believe.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome, Carrie. Thank you for joining me. Do you go by Carrie or Carrie Ann?
I go by Carrie Ann.
Okay.
But sometimes people call me Carrie and don't freak out.
It angers you.
No.
Some people call me Scotty.
That's not okay. Like, you gotta know if you're a Scotty. You know what I mean? Some people can be Scotty, but not everyone can.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. It is not my preferred nomenclature. There are also some people who call me, and I probably shouldn't even say this on a podcast, there are some who call me Scotty Cakes.
Which I thought I could guess who that is.
It is not who you might guess.
Oh.
But you know, I find that it's affectionate, but that's all right. But anyway, this is not about my nicknames. Why don't you tell the fine people listening where they might know you from?
You might know me from my blog, the Little Big Blog. It's a blog about thrifting and creative domesticity.
I do enjoy it. Well, I having married a person who enjoys thrifting, I have become...
It's the best thing ever.
It's opened my eyes to the fact that many thrift stores also have cheap books.
Yeah.
And so that's what
I
do.
We have an enormous home library. Enormous. And almost everything came from either thrift stores or library sales, which is like a thrift store just with books.
I agree. So. I love library sales. But we're not here to talk about books. We're here to talk about the far superior television, in particular Star Trek. So would you...
Throw your books away.
That's right. You don't need them unless they're Star Trek books, and then keep
them. Keep those.
Because they're like TV, only they're printed. So tell me, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I think I would consider myself a Star Trek fan. In fact, I got very offended on Star Trek's behalf one time when my husband actually said that he was probably not a biggest fan as I was. Because I felt that the show should inspire such a burning passion so great in every fan that you can't imagine anyone not loving it as much as you do.
And so what did you do about this situation?
I'm a fan. I just told him I was very disappointed in him.
I'm not mad at you. I'm just disappointed.
Just disappointed. Yeah. It was my fault for believing in you.
Now, when I invited you on, you had an interesting reaction in that you decided that you had to prove to me that you like Star Trek. And so you had you had several things that you told me that were interesting. Which I found fascinating. So let's talk a little bit about the things that you used as your
my proof.
Proof that you're a fan.
A legal tender.
That's right. You have now this is something I've never done myself, but I do not judge anyone. It's just because on me, Starfleet uniforms not very flattering.
On most people, they're not.
It is true. You have to be in a very narrow band of people, I think, in order to pull off a Starfleet uniform. I am not in that band, but you had a Christmas card, in fact, featuring yourself and your husband and your daughter, although she's not wearing a Starfleet uniform.
No, she was wearing a Kiki's Delivery Service witch outfit, but she did appear to be sitting on Data's lap.
She did. She doesn't look too pleased to be on his lap, though.
No, she told me later that she wanted to be on Troy's lap and that she was too afraid of Data. I needed to correct this. So next Christmas.
Deanna next Troi.
Christmas. Yes, yes.
And you also have a story about, once again, dressing up as a Star Trek character.
Yes. So, you know, and it's not that I'm a big cosplayer, just it happened to be Halloween both times. And our original goal, my friend and I, her name's Stephanie, and she's also a big Star Trek fan. Mm-hmm. Our goal was we were going to dress as, I was going to be Troi, and she was going to be Beverly. And we were going to dress in those weird leotard outfits that they wore in that one episode when Troi, like, fell in love with that one negotiator guy, and they're like doing these weird stretches and they're talking about boys and like the outfits are like so ridiculous that we were like we have to wear those. And so that was going to be, those weird leotards were going to be our outfit. And then I found out I was pregnant, and that you know buzzkill on the outfit. So I decided that if I was going to be pregnant on Halloween, I should be Deanna Troi from the episode of The Child. So I had kind of a blue outfit. Like, she wears this blue maternity outfit when she's impregnated with that, like, little flashbulb thing.
As happens.
And then we never talk about it again in any other episode after that.
Let us never mention this.
Never. Never. That was weird. So I got a wig and I got a little hairband and I had like my little Deanna Troi maternity outfit on. And I was so proud of myself that I actually tweeted a picture of it to Marina Sirtis. And she told me I looked great. So I feel like, you know, I don't have to do much else in life. That was like the pinnacle.
You're done.
Yeah, I'm done.
No, Star Trek actors have tweeted at me, so.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I was like kind of fishing for it, but still, it's pretty.
It still counts.
Yeah.
You did the work. You deserve it.
I really did. Yeah.
Talk about what your favorite series of Star Trek is.
Well, as you can probably guess, it is TNG. But I adore Deep Space Nine. I adore it. And I love Enterprise. So I'm really not very familiar with TOS. I haven't seen that many episodes. I want to see more episodes, but I haven't. And I have to say, I'm not a fan of Voyager.
Well, I'm not a fan of Voyager either, as is well documented. But I do think, so I find it interesting that you like Enterprise.
Yeah.
Because I am also not a fan of Enterprise. Although, once again, I have to explain this because I get people are like, why are you hating on my favorite series? I don't hate any of them. I like them all, but, you know, it's an ordering of preference.
Yeah. I didn't think I was going to like Enterprise, and it took me a very, very long time to watch it. And I'm trying to remember, like, what either health emergency or birth of a child led me to have enough time to, like, watch it. And so I watched it, and I was like, wow, this show really, like, it addresses so many things that, like, inconsistencies between the original series and TNG and even stuff that happens, you know, much later on. And it provides like a great insight into how, you know, like the relationship with the Vulcans, and just it just goes so many great places. And I like a lot of the characters.
And I think I liked Enterprise's premise, and I like the fact that they address a lot of this, you know, historical stuff.
Although
that's a double-edged sword, because sometimes it angers me when they try to explain away some thing, like the Klingons' appearance.
Right. But I thought at least they addressed it.
That's true. They had,
you know, they addressed it, and they addressed it in a sort of plausible way.
Star Trek plausible.
This is the great thing about Star Trek. If you don't like one of the movies or an episode or whatever, you know what? That's an alternate timeline. Whatever you like still exists in a different timeline.
That is true. And that's why I've said before, I don't judge anyone's fandom, but I do question it. So, because, you know, a life unexamined is not worth living.
I judge it a little bit.
You do, slightly, just a tiny bit. All those people who love Voyager are being judged.
not necessarily, but
a little bit. Now, TNG, why is it your favorite series?
Well, it was my first Star Trek. You know, it came on. Of course. You know, it came on. I was in like seventh grade when I started watching it. We didn't have cable, so just like whatever came on that we could get in with our antenna reception, I watched. And so I quickly became very involved in TNG. And in fact, I had a boyfriend call me one time, and I was like, "Oh, I can't talk right now. Star Trek's on." Bye. And I didn't realize that like that wasn't very cool, and he got very upset about that. It was my first series, but it's also, I think, what I really love about TNG to this day is that it's an aspirational story about humanity solving problems with, you know, compassion or using our wits or science, even though the science isn't real, science or diplomacy, you know, finding these ways to solve our problems, you know, in a way that now we don't usually.
Yes, I think, I mean, it's much like the original series. It's a hopeful vision of the future, which, I mean, that's why I also enjoy it, because, you know, people are competent and they're doing, well, generally competent. They're doing their jobs. They're out there exploring. They're not there to fight.
Right.
Whereas Captain Kirk's kind of always ready for a fight. We get that a little bit with Riker, but he is tempered by Jean-Luc Picard.
Yes. Yeah.
And it is interesting, though, that I like that aspect of Star Trek so much. And yet, I like Deep Space Nine so much.
And well, Deep Space Nine really hit the nail on the head as mm-hmm. far as character development, and that's what people like about shows.
Yes.
You know, they want to know the journey of the people.
That's right, and that's Deep Space Nine is the first Star Trek series that actually did that, because it was, you know, produced at a time when people who make TV at least started to realize, hey,
yeah.
maybe we could tell a long story as opposed to this episodic thing, whereas yeah. you know, someone yeah. gets impregnated by a light bulb, but then we never talk about it again.
And then we never talk about it again.
It's right. never happened.
Right. Well, and also with TNG, they had a lot of different writers,
mm-hmm.
so it was sort of like a collection of short stories. Was kind of how it played out, because there were different people taking the reins on different episodes. And for part of it, I can't remember during what seasons, but it may have been part of the second or third season. I know there was a writer's strike somewhere in there.
Yes, I think that is towards the end of the second season.
Yeah.
Because that includes the episode Shades of Grey, which we talked
about.
Was
that the clip show?
Yes, that was a clip show.
Yeah, unfortunate.
No, so not so good.
No.
But if you know the circumstances, it's understandable, but still.
Right,
not
right,
a good episode.
Yeah. No. But, you know, it's almost like, you know, here's this world was built, anyone could pick it up and mm-hmm. make a story about it.
Right, that here are our pre-made characters.
Right.
Have fun with
them. Toward the end of the series, they really did get in more to character development.
Yes, and I've said this before, but I mean, I think the person who has the most development over the course of the seven seasons, even though it's kind of stunted, is Data.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
you watch Encounter at Farpoint, and Data is, you know, it's even hard to think if he's sentient or not. He's just so
right,
robotic.
Right.
Then you go to the last All Good Things, and right. he's, you know, he's a crazy cat android, and he's
right.
Living in Oxford and, you know, or right. Cambridge, wherever he is. Some English university.
Right. Some fancy pants.
That's right. I'm sure someone will also correct me on that. So so it's an interesting journey that we go on with
yeah.
Data.
Yeah. I think that Picard really evolved over this series too.
That's
especially
true.
Once you take the movies into account, you know, and they go at the point a couple times of like him not having children
mm-hmm.
and how much of a regret is that, and you know, in the beginning of the series he's like, children, gross, touching me, you know, and toward the end he's fondly you know, connecting with his nephew and mm-hmm. you know,
who
there are changes.
Spoiler
yeah.
alert, dies.
Spoiler alert, it's horrible.
It's not so good for Jean-Luc.
No.
Then he thinks, why? Why did I like children?
Right. But then, you know, when he goes in the movie where he goes into the Nexus, you know, it's mm-hmm. all about, he has like seven children or something ridiculous.
That's true.
Like,
and that's very Dickensian.
Oh, papa. Yeah. Yeah.
And
Jean-Luc
is an interesting fellow.
He is. He is. But they all did evolve.
So
for example, Worf's head. There was the evolution of Worf's head. He's got about four different heads that he goes through in the series.
And sashes. He goes through, well, just
and
two sashes.
Right. But the heads, like, some of those heads are not so flattering.
Yeah, I'm sure Michael Dorn probably asked for more flattering heads.
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
how much pull he got. But and you know, yeah. kind of Worf started off as, they probably said, well, we need an alien on the bridge,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we don't want to make him a full-time crew member, like a full-time star, because it'll be so expensive to make him up.
Right.
So we'll just have a Klingon, which is shocking to see a Klingon. You know, when Next Generation first came out,
bridge.
It was shocking to see
yeah.
a Klingon on the bridge, right? You're like, oh, what the heck?
Yeah.
And so,
I think I kind of benefited from being a kid watching it and mm-hmm. not knowing any of the baggage, the emotional baggage. I accepted everything. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. Sure, Klingon, whatever. You know, it wasn't an issue for me.
That's her. You are race blind. You do
I
not
am.
See. Or
I
ridges
see.
Blind. I don't see.
Especially those races that camouflage themselves.
They are the trickiest. There are several officers on the bridge who are camouflaged and you never see them. That's how they keep costs down.
That's right.
But then when, you know, Tasha Yar left, spoiler alert, she dies. Worf steps up to fill the security role. He becomes a much more integral character.
He's a great character.
He is. And then he goes on to jump ship and he shows up in Deep Space Nine. So
he really evolved because he's such a different character mm-hmm. in DS9, like where he's just more like, I don't know, like self-assured. He's just, you know, you don't in DS9, no one's shooting him down.
That's true.
Whereas he is constantly shot down in TNG.
Yes, he's good. Because even in this episode, his first reaction is, let's shoot it.
Right.
And everyone's right. Like, well, Worf, we could do that, but let's not.
So he's grown. He's realized you cannot shoot your way out of every problem in life.
That's right. You can. There is a subset, perhaps large, that right. you can shoot yourself out of.
Right, right.
But it is surrounded by an even larger subset in which the phaser should not be your first option.
He really comes into his own in DS9.
Yes, and then he has, you know, he falls in love with Dax. And Worf
spoiler alert.
Well, yeah, if you this whole podcast is a spoiler, so they get married.
Yeah.
Then she dies. See, look, yeah. I'm just putting all the spoilers out there. It's very sad. She's replaced by a far crappier version.
Oh, man.
Which I don't understand why they did that.
That was sad. That was sad.
Yes, a moment of silence for Jadzia Dax. Okay, and but yeah, so then Worf, he has a very, I feel like you said, he comes into his own in Deep Space Nine. Yeah. And this episode that we're discussing, which we haven't even started yet, but now this is my segue. I'll use Worf as a bridge into this episode. Clues, season 4 of The Next Generation, episode 14, features... Worf, well, it doesn't really feature Worf, but he's on the bridge and he says angry things. And he modulates the shields.
Yes.
And tries to shoot Deanna Troi. But people are like, hey, chill out, Worf. Put that down.
She like, just like flips him out of the way. Like,
she does. She breaks his wrist.
Yeah.
Take that.
Bye, Felicia. Yeah.
So let's talk about, we've talked about a lot of characters. I want to talk about Deanna Troi as a character.
Yes. Yes.
And then we can talk about her in this episode in particular, especially since she's one of your favorite characters.
Yeah.
I feel like she is vastly underutilized.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you get, like, some of the other science officers, like Beverly. Like, whenever Beverly interacts with other people, they're like, we saw your research paper, Beverly. We read what you had to say. That was awesome.
And you're like, we respect you.
Exactly. And Troi, you know, I know she did important work at... there's that episode with Tin Man, and she did important work with, like, that Tam Elbrun or something.
Mm-hmm.
She did, like, important work with him, and no one ever mentions, like, her research papers. Or she has all these, like, amazing diplomatic achievements, you know, different negotiations she's attended with Picard and these different things. No one ever mentions that.
And like, she dressed up like a Romulan?
She dressed up like a Romulan, yeah. Like, she's had, you know, she's done, like, a lot of great things, but the show chose not to flesh her character out very much at all. They pretty much use her character as a mirror
mm-hmm.
to show reactions to things going on around her, where her character could have and should have been fully fleshed out because all the content is there. They just needed to use it.
Yeah, and she has an interesting you know, past with Riker. Yeah. They could have played with a little bit, but not much. I've said in a previous episode of Random Trek that now I can't remember that Troi, I feel like, is treated like a piece of equipment.
Yeah.
More than a character. So she's like, they roll her out when they need to figure out what someone is feeling.
Right.
And then
right.
they put her away.
And so she can say, like, the most obvious thing.
Right.
You have to feel bad for Marina Sirtis because she must have felt like an idiot going, you look sad.
Yes, I'm crying. And people, all the other characters, like when she does that, they're dismissive of her as they should be because it's obvious. But it was a writer's choice to make that happen.
It really was. It really was. And there was enough content there to where it could have been amazing. So, you know how in DS9 they had the mirror universe of everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't mirror universe Troi have been such a badass?
She would have to be by definition.
Yeah. Like, she would have been running the Enterprise.
Well, she has an advantage in that she can sense people's motivations and emotional levels, so she could totally use that against them.
Right.
And
that
devious.
Would have been awesome in Mirror Universe. In this universe, she's like, I'm going to have a sundae.
I love chocolate. That was
chocolate.
Part of her deep characterization.
Yeah.
Is that she loves chocolate and she can feel when you're sad.
Right. But I feel that, like, as a fan, like, I know what she could have been, and that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why I love her. And plus, again, you know, I was like 14 when I started watching, and a lot of that was just over my head. You know, I liked her.
And there's nothing wrong with liking her. She just pales in comparison as a character to as a strong female character to Dr. Crusher. Dr. Crusher's walking around in her lab coat, and she's, you know, bossing people around as she should.
And she's, like, standing up to Picard.
Yep.
Like, you are not beaming me up from this planet.
Exactly. She you know, makes him take his medicine. She
That's right.
You know, she tells him when he has to, you know, take a vacation, basically.
Right.
And nobody really questions Dr. Crusher, except in that one episode where she was in that collapsing warped bubble.
The,
and people thought she was
bubble.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people thought she was going crazy. But yeah, I mean, she's a great character. And she is, because she's an expert. She's a doctor. People respect her opinion. Whereas Counselor Troi, you're just like,
it should have been the same thing for her, like, because, you know, she is a science officer as well.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So they should have taken advantage of that, had her write papers, have her conduct research.
And also,
be an active character.
They chose her not to, for whatever reason, she doesn't wear the same uniform as everybody else.
Well, until, like, Jellicoe comes, and he's like,
yes,
you need to wear a uniform.
I don't know what you're wearing, but it's inappropriate. I guess Captain Picard liked it. I don't know.
Right. Well, you know, and again, as a kid, I thought that was awesome.
So let's talk about this episode. What happens in this episode is there's a mystery, and people say it like 18 times. There is a mystery. Just in case you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Several characters say it several times. That there is a mystery. And the name of the episode is Clues, because they're looking for clues to solve this mystery.
Although, wouldn't it have been great if they did, like, an actual Clue the movie style? That would have been amazing. Like, Data's, like, running to different rooms. And then...
And then they had three different endings.
Great.
That would be fantastic.
I would watch that.
Maybe if there's another Star Trek series that is going to come out, they will do that. But basically, this episode, I'll give a very brief summary, and then we can just talk about some high points in it. The Enterprise shows up at this, well, actually, the Enterprise is kind of in a lull. Not much is happening, so everybody can do whatever they want to do. It starts off with a series of little scenes of what characters do when they're not being on the bridge, which includes, apparently, for Riker and Worf, that's what his name is. They do some kind of Klingon calisthenic thing.
Troi's there, too.
Oh, yes, Troi is there
as
well.
It's basically Tai Chi.
Yes, it is Tai Chi with an apostrophe somewhere.
Yeah.
apparently Beverly Crusher likes to grow moss in her free time. So she has a bunch of, clear orbs that she's going to be cultivating this moss in. Which is very important. And in fact, there are many things about this episode that I remembered when I was watching it. But the clearest memory I have is a shot of those orbs full of the pink moss later in the episode. I don't know why that stood out for me, but that was my clearest memory of this episode. Kind of weird.
Like, they have this whole future in front of them, and they're growing moss.
They're growing moss. That's what she likes to do. Hey.
Yeah.
No judgment. And Captain Picard, of course, likes to go to the holodeck and pretend he's Dixon Hill, private detective. Or Private Dick, probably, is what he says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he invites Guinan to join him, and she doesn't get it. And this is when...
The biggest mystery to Guinan was how to put the underwear on.
Yes.
Which that I thought was the mystery.
Slightly a gratuitous shot, but...
Right.
Why not? Whoopi Goldberg looked good, so I'm sure she was okay with it.
Banging. You know, Guinan's like his one friend... He can't, like, order to hang out with him.
Yeah, I had never thought of that. That's true. Yeah. She has to choose to be with him.
Right. So I think, like, he values that.
And he was excited to show her this thing that he really loves.
Yeah.
Which is a totally understandable impulse. We've all been there, like, when we want to share, like, a song or something that we really love with our friends, and we're kind of nervous because we don't know if they'll like it or not. and the worst outcome is when they're like, you like
this? Fun?
I'm having a great time. And that was kind of Guinan's reaction to
explaining, like, what a mystery was to Guinan is kind of like when I had to explain what a mystery was to my 5-year-old.
Like, she doesn't get it.
Like, so this is what's happening?
Which is surprising, because Guinan is...
As the listeners.
Is a listener, and very smart, and a very competent character. Mm-hmm. She's kind of, you know, that whole still water runs deep.
Nothing's a mystery to her.
Oh.
She understands it all.
That's right. She doesn't get the concept. She's never had to do it. And a fun fact about Dixon Hill, I've played the Star Trek customizable card game, and they had an expansion set called the Kivas Phaedro set, which includes Dixon Hill as a character, as a card, and also includes Dixon Hill's business card. So I have his business card.
Was this the deck building game?
Yes. It's like Magic, only with Star Trek.
Yeah, my husband has that.
Oh, see, I have lots of them.
Yeah.
Because I'm a giant nerd, obviously. So they said, overall, I like this episode. I thought it was a little heavy-handed.
Yep,
and this
absolutely.
Is a clear instance of that because he's trying to solve a mystery. So he's explaining to Guinan what a mystery is.
Right.
And he says, like, this is a mystery, like, three times in this, like, 3 minutes
I feel like the writers maybe weren't very optimistic about the audience.
It is a little insulting. I know what you're saying here. You don't need to tell me. It's a mystery.
Right.
I get it. And so one thing I really like, though, is that so they come across this wormhole and Data needs to get the captain. And so he decides to route his call through the holodeck.
I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, so Data's on the phone. And my other question, and maybe you probably don't have an answer, but maybe you have an opinion about this. They are on the holodeck, and you know, someone gets shot. It's very dramatic, mm-hmm. and music starts to play.
Right.
And
yes,
my thinking,
music.
Do you think that on the holodeck that music is playing to highlight?
I had that conversation with my husband because you know, there's all of a sudden like this giant brass section coming out of nowhere.
Yes.
And so we're thinking that like they must. You can probably turn that off if you don't want it.
Oh, like
but I bet there's probably like a whole collection of, now that's what I can call computer simulated music, like from the holodeck that you can like download and listen to in your quarters.
That's probably true. And I guess you can, when you're setting up your holodeck program, much like when you play a game on your phone or something, you can uncheck sound effects and soundtrack.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised Jean-Luc didn't.
I know. I always turn it off.
It was a little intense.
But he was so into it. He really likes that.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to see Jean-Luc Picard out of his uniform and doing something wacky. Whether it's, you know, riding a horse or trying to solve a mystery as Dixon Hill. It's fun to see him outside of his normal commanding presence.
It is.
But sadly, they come across this thing, and so everybody has to end their fun time activities and go back to the bridge and be responsible officers. They come across this planet that seems like there's a wormhole, so they go to investigate. They go through the wormhole. Everybody's knocked out except for Data. Then the crew wakes up, and Data says, you were a Jean-Luc Picard. Is like, how long were we out, Data? And he says, 30 seconds. And he says, what's happening? What happened? We went through this wormhole. We're a day away from where we were before. Everyone's like, well, that's weird, but let's keep going.
Stuff like that happens when you're in space.
It's true. I feel like this is a fairly, not random occurrence, but a fairly normal occurrence on the Enterprise.
Within the realm of possibility.
They're always going through wormholes or anomalies.
Right.
So I guess it doesn't require too much stretch of the imagination to think they'd be like, well, all right, let's keep going. They're on a schedule. Jean-Luc does say that.
Right.
We need to
that's
go.
Right.
He doesn't say where they need to go, I don't think, but they need to be there. And so that's the setup of the episode. And basically, they find out by using one of the B-plot points that Dr. Crusher, in fact, her moss has grown more than 30 seconds worth. So she's like, well, I think we were out for longer than 30
Someone
seconds.
Someone turned that mold up to 11.
That's right. And she accuses Nurse...
Or Nurse Ogawa.
Ogawa, yeah, of fiddling with her experiment. And she's like horrified. She's like, Dr. Crusher,
I would never touch
an experiment without you telling me to.
I'm afraid of you.
That's right. You are a horrible boss, and I'm uncomfortable.
I love, though, that they immediately got Beverly involved, because Beverly will not let anything go.
No, everybody's
She will not.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, this doesn't add up, and you know, like, if there's an autopsy she wants to do, she will do it.
That's right, she
doesn't need permission. Is something she wants to, like, she will not let anything go, which is why I would totally watch a cozy mystery series where Beverly goes around and, like, solves mysteries all day. Like, I would totally, like, read that series.
I totally would, too. I love those series, like Rosemary and Thyme and, you know, all these other things.
I thought it could be called The Doctective.
Oh.
And my husband said that was terrible.
Well, it might need a little more workshopping, but I like where you're going. Everybody else is like, well, whatever. These are weird things. Weird things happen in space. You know that you're on the Enterprise. Weird crap happens all the time. And Dr. Crusher's like, no, we need to figure out what happened.
Right.
And then this is where Captain Picard's like, oh, yes, must look for clues because it's a mystery. And you're like, okay, yes, we know it's a mystery.
At this point, it really reminds me of the Busy Town Mysteries cartoon that my daughter watches.
Yes, and so they have a whole bunch of... Jean-Luc says, okay, everyone, report any unusual things to me. And so we find out that the chronometer has been tampered with, and the bad news is that only Geordi and Data can tamper with the chronometer. Worf's wrist has been broken, and one of the few people on the Enterprise that can break Worf's wrist is Data. And so, and Captain Picard keeps interrogating Data, but Data gives him weird answers and will not really help. And also, Counselor Troi is having weird dizzy spells,
which
are not explained, but then at the end, kind of figure out why she's having these weird dizzy spells. And so they're like, what the heck is going on, Data? And he's like, well, I don't think we should go back to the planet. There was a sensor malfunction. It wasn't even an M-class planet like we thought. It was this other planet. And then Geordi runs that image through their database and figures out that that's a different planet light years away. And people are like, what the heck, Data? And there's a really great scene in like the ready room where all the officers are there. And Captain Picard's like, okay, Data, we'll explain what happened. And Data gives some cockamamie excuse for what happens.
I don't know why he just didn't be like, I don't know.
I know, weird stuff, man.
Not weird.
But no, he gives a very specific answer. And Captain Picard's like, oh.
He's just not good at lying.
He is not good at lying.
Yeah. And
Captain Picard's like, okay, Data, well, I said that you would go help someone reconfigure the sensors, so go do that. Which was clearly, obviously, a reason just to get him out of the
tactic.
Room.
Yeah.
So Data's like, okay, I'll go. And that's when Jean-Luc says, okay, everybody, do you believe him? And there's silence. And then he's like, no, really.
Like, well, it appears as though his pants are on fire.
That's right.
That's happening.
Yeah, so Geordi's like, no, he's totally lying. And now everyone is kind of shocked. He's lying. And so they
it's
figure
a conspiracy.
Out,
everyone loves conspiracies.
It's true. A conspiracy wrapped in a mystery.
Wrapped in a Data.
Oh, that's right. And an android. And so Captain Picard's like, okay, I've had enough of this crap. We're going back to the scene of the crime where it all started to see if we can figure out what's happening. So they return.
So kind of in between there, they end up in Data's quarters.
Oh, that's
true. And they're asking him questions. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just the angle of filming, but his quarters later on in the series are completely different. They're way bigger. True. You know, he has all his paintings and stuff everywhere, and he has like a table.
Well, he got
but
a cat,
in this one,
so.
Yeah. so now he qualifies.
Yes.
Right. But this one is just like a kind of a, I don't know, small dining roomish area with just a big like desk and everything. And kind of, I really can't think of why they were like, we must interrogate him in his quarters. Like I don't really understand that, because the only other time I really remember his quarters figuring that largely in an episode is when Lore comes aboard and he makes contact at that console in his room with the crystalline entity.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like trying to throw... The way they filmed it, they were throwing like shade pretty hard on Data and making it really look, you know, there's a couple times where they did like close-ups that looked very suspicious
mm-hmm.
on Data. And so it made me wonder if they were trying to get kind of like a Lore, like kind of drawing a comparison to Lore working with the crystalline entity. Because eventually, like, you know, Lore switched places and like deactivates Data and leaves him
right
in his quarters right there. But all that happens in his quarters. And it made me wonder, like, because why are they even having that in his quarters?
Yeah, and I thought it was weird. They interrogate him in his quarters, but he doesn't sit behind his desk. Picard nope. sits behind Data's desk.
Yeah.
I thought it was very weird.
It was kind of an odd scene. And also, like, it was, like, kind of decorated real weird. It's as if, like, Picard went in there and was like, make sure the chairs are made of the same blue carpet as the floors. And that's an order.
Like,
it's
like,
just
okay.
It's just kind of weird. Which is kind of a weird scene.
Data perhaps is not the best interior decorator.
No.
I assume all the quarters are similar but quite different. So I guess that people have the option to decorate it as they please. Because we see Deanna's quarters a little bit in this episode, not much.
She sleeps
under a sequined blanket, as I recall.
It's a shiny blanket, yes. And I love those blankets because they look so useless and weird. And there's a Twitter account called Riker Googling. Have you heard of this?
I have.
So I love Riker Googling. And one of the things he searches for when he Googles is Etsy shiny blanket. And that was probably my favorite ever Googling tweet ever. Etsy shiny blanket.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And so
also, the alien, when they possess her, mm-hmm. like, she's in her pajamas. She's ready for bed. So the alien, like, takes the time to, like, put her hair in Troy hair,
yes,
and put her uniform on. Like, she should have just marched in there in her pajamas.
Well, she needs to have the alien wants some dignity. She's not going to be traipsing around. Captain Picard likes to traipse around in his pajamas in many episodes, but Deanna Troy does not. So they go back. The aliens inhabit Troy because I guess she's an empath, so they pick her as a vessel. I don't know. They don't really explain why. Then she goes to talk to Data, and she's like, she as the alien is like, the plan didn't work. You're back. We need to destroy you. Data's like, well, maybe not. Maybe we can try it again. Which is very not unconvincing, but the aliens go for it.
I love how they're like, oh, you're worthy of a second chance. And I'm thinking, like, we might need like 4 or 5 more chances, to be honest.
Yeah, this is not a great plan.
But again, I think what they were initially going for was that they were trying to solve problems, you know, using diplomacy and maybe charisma. You know, they're trying to solve problems the non-Worf way.
Right.
It's just a lot to fit in one episode.
Yeah, a lot is going on.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, a lot is going on, but there's also a lot of downtime in this episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It lingers. It takes its time.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. I did overall enjoy the episode, but it's not action packed.
No.
It's full of stuff, full of concepts.
Right.
And so the big kind of ending is that Data goes up to the bridge and Counselor Troy comes on looking weird, but she doesn't do anything weird yet because she hasn't spoken. She speaks in a spooky voice when she's inhabited.
I love her when she does her weird, when they have her be aliens, because she's an alien. She gets possessed several times over the course of this series, and I like it. I think she always just looks like a badass. You know, like the normal fawning kind of moments that they give her character are gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
she changes her whole demeanor.
Yeah.
Which is the mark of a good actress or actor.
Yeah.
I guess is what we say now. Nowadays, we don't use the gendered nouns. I apologize. So they're on the bridge and Picard's like, damn it, I'm not leaving. There's an energy field out and protecting the planet, so they know something's up. And Picard's
right.
Like,
well, they can't leave, though, because at this point, even though they realize it's safer if they leave, they have to solve this mystery or else Data runs the risk of being like, well, he'll be court-martialed for sure, but also disassembled. So they have to do it to save Data now.
That's right. Now they have a mission, and Captain Picard also hates a mystery, so he needs to solve the mystery.
Must kill it.
That's right. And so there's a scene where he's like, damn it, Data, tell me why you won't tell me what's going on. Because they, you know, interrogate him. Data refuses to say anything. And he gives some weird answers. And so Data's like, well, I can't tell you. And then Picard has a light bulb moment where he's like, were you contacted by Starfleet? And did they tell you not to tell me?
Again, conspiracy.
That's right. And Data's like, I can't tell you that.
Now, do you think that Picard caught on pretty quickly or that it took him a long time? Because my husband and I have different like reactions.
It felt to me like he caught on very quickly.
That's what my husband thinks. Although I felt like it took him forever. But maybe that's just because, you know, I just feel so loyal to Data that I'd automatically be like, you know,
you're lying for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that he, I mean, it was,
looking back on it, though, I can see why.
Yes, it was clear they didn't want to believe that he was lying, but he was acting oddly. So they need to figure out what was going on. And then, you know, Deanna Troi is on the bridge. She speaks in her wacky alien voice saying, you have to leave because you've invaded our system. And that's when Data is, and so Picard's like, well, who gave you this order, Data? Damn it. And there's this very dramatic moment where he says, "You did." And you're like, "Oh, what?"
Dun, dun, dun.
And it turns out, you know, that they once again try the same plan again. So we find out that everyone was knocked out, but not Data, because the bio field of these aliens couldn't knock Data out. So he revived everybody. And then they tried to, the aliens said, "Oh, we're going to kill you all if you tell anybody about our planet, dudes." And so they're like, "Well, we'll promise not to do it, and we'll set up, you know, we'll knock everybody out, and Data, well, tell Data never to tell anybody, and we'll doctor the records.
It'll all be cool, man.
Trust us.
Yeah.
Which seems, I mean, this whole concept, and then they do the exact same thing again, only better, so that they don't leave any clues, right? And the aliens are like, "Okay, you won't die."
They're fine with that.
Yes. And then the episode ends with everybody wakes up. They're like, "Whoa, where are we?" Data says, "Oh, we're through a wormhole." Captain Picard's like, "Oh, let's go back and check it out." And Data says, "Well, it'd probably be safer if we didn't." And Captain Picard hesitates. And then he's like, "Okay, let's go. We're on a schedule."
He hesitates for a while. But yeah.
He does.
Kind of, they do that out.
But I think I have a problem with them doing it twice, because it seems like it's like kind of against their whole reason for being out there.
Right.
And that they're all breaking many Starfleet regulations by tampering with records, by not telling anybody what's happening.
Right.
It seems problematic at best.
They took like accommodating that species, like they took that to an extreme.
Yes. And I question whether they would have done it. But I guess Captain Picard wanted to save his crew, so he did it because he didn't feel like he had any other choice. And technically, Data does know what happened, although he's told to never tell anyone until he's destroyed.
Dun, dun.
And, of course, this is never brought up again, so one assumes...
As is the tradition.
Exactly.
TNG. So, they all are suffering from severe short-term memory.
That's
they
right.
honestly don't remember what happened in previous episodes.
Or
Data
maybe.
Had a daughter? What?
Maybe at the end of every episode, but we don't see this, Jean-Luc orders everyone to never tell anyone what happened.
We must never speak of this again.
Yes.
Like a clause in the Prime Directive. Or not.
That's right. Because I know, watching these with a critical eye again, you notice many things that people on the flagship of the Starfleet should not be doing. So maybe they just never tell anybody.
Yeah.
Everybody be cool.
Don't want anyone to know about this.
It's a circle of trust. Nothing leaves the circle. So what did you think of the episode overall?
I liked it. It wasn't one of my favorites.
No.
To be honest, kind of forgettable.
Yes, but... It's one of the middling kind of...
Yeah.
It has
yeah.
its moments.
But I liked parts about it. I'm sure that the first time I watched it, I'm sure it was very absorbing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure that...
And even though I knew what was going to happen, I still thought that that moment when Data says, you ordered me not to tell, was kind of shocking.
Yeah, it was good acting.
Yeah, so kudos to them for that. Well, we're done. Thank you, Carrie. And I like to end abruptly. It's a mystery.
It's a mystery. We'll never talk about this podcast again.
Yes, let us never speak of this again. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm honored to be here. I will talk about Star Trek all day long, whether anyone is listening or not. I call that Twitter. So
well,
I'm honored to be here.
I cannot guarantee that anyone is listening to this. I like to think someone is. I would say my mom listens, but she doesn't, because she doesn't like Star Trek, and she doesn't understand podcasts, so... On the next Random Trek, The Next Generation's Identity Crisis.